Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path. Coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to have you here. Thanks for joining us. You're going to have to, if I fall asleep like halfway during the show, you're going to have to beg my pardon. But tonight was the big hibachi night with Live from the Path. It was all right. It was all right. I had, I ate an octopus, though.
Ooh.
Here's the deal. I didn't walk into it thinking I'm going to eat an octopus tonight.
They kind of rubbery?
But it was. It was a little bit crunchy. Mm-hmm. And they had some kind of like spice on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what kind of tongue I have, but it is like a pan-European tongue, in which I don't tolerate spice. Hmm. And it wasn't too much that I made a boobus out of myself, but like it was a little hot. Mm-hmm. Like me and the 2-year-old that also had it had a similar reaction to this baby octopus.
Yeah, and he cried and wailed.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell that part of the story, Dave.
But no, yeah. I wasn't talking about the 2-year-old.
Hey, you're listening live from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging out. So, if you missed the hibachi night, I would like to invite you to another one at whatever frequency in which you want to pay. You should go out and enjoy that. What else did I have? They had some sushi.
Mm-hmm.
I ate a lot of that. I had. Here's the deal. What is it about? Maybe it's just the types of buffets that I go to. But I have yet to go to a buffet where I was impressed with the dessert selection. Except for the canned, like I'm a pretty big fan of cheap chocolate pudding.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
stuff they serve by the gallon. You know, I love that stuff. But I have not gone to a buffet, especially like a Chinese buffet. Like I couldn't move to Asia because mm-hmm. these dessert options are just not on my palate, man.
They often look good, and then you eat them, and you're like,
like
it's dry or something. Different mm-hmm. places.
They're always little cake squares or something that isn't like cake. It's always a little bit more moist than I like, mm-hmm. or it's like. Something that looks like it should be good, like bananas, but then it's covered in some kind of weird sugary substance. I'm like, meh, I don't know.
Now I've heard rumors that Prairie Meadows has some pretty good dessert at their buffet.
Oh, really?
I may have partaken before.
So that's a verified rumor.
That's a verified rumor. I didn't know if I should say that out loud.
Anyway,
I've not gambled there, though.
No, I've gambled there. So anyway,
except for the horses.
You got to do the hibachi. It's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's the best, but it's pretty good, and we had great company. So very, very blessed to meet Pete and his family out, hanging out there. So, anyway, do what you want to do on the buffet. Live your life. All right. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. We got some secular versus Solomon. This is where I'll give you a proverb or a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether it is a worldly bit of wisdom or whether it is something from a biblical bit of wisdom. And frankly, sometimes I think we run into the biblical bit of wisdom and we're like, well, I'm not sure why that's wise. we'll maybe hit some of those, see what's going on. We also have some advice on Dear Life from the Path. People still got troubles in the world, and we're here to help because you're at the last straw, mm-hmm. and so we can do that. We'll see what's going on and see if we can provide some hopefully biblically oriented advice on how to handle the affairs of your day to day. Also, we are number 7 on the guy who's what I gained when I left my religion, and we may just kick off with that one because I don't know. I've been struggling with this one all week. What guys going on? So what I gained when I lost my religion? Number 6 last week was getting Sunday mornings back. Up to this point, we didn't have much of a qualm. It sounded like it was a good idea to ditch his religion. The getting Sunday mornings back, I think we really struggled with, because to the extent that if you're following Jesus and have committed your life to him, it really should wreck your life if you've left your religion, because Jesus took that much of it up, as opposed to, I just lost my Sunday morning. It's probably a good hint that perhaps you didn't understand what Jesus had on the table to begin with. So you can catch that up. If you go to YouTube, you can look at the clips or on our website, our commentary on that. This week is number 7. What I gained when I lost my religion from time.com. It's better health. Better health. Jesus is making you sick. Here we go. I realize good health and spiritual commitment don't have to be mutually exclusive. But for me personally, a shift in beliefs brought a shift in priorities, such that my physical health became more important to me. Now I feel better than I've ever felt in my life, and this significantly of my life. Just yesterday, I ran another one of those mud runs with some friends in another state, and I had a blast. I hope to write a few thoughts and observations about that soon.
Jesus, people can't do mud runs.
Number 7.
That's the entire thing?
Can you deal with it? Yeah, that's the entire thing.
So the guy's saying that because I believed in Jesus, I couldn't do mud runs?
He couldn't jog or take care of
himself. I think it was
himself.
Just a shift in priorities is all.
Yeah, because Jesus totally tells you to wreck your body. He says, hey, man, make sure that you're eating all the time.
Try some of these ding-dongs.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus says, hey, make sure you're a glutton in all things. You know, drink as much as possible. Make sure that you're eating as much as possible. And don't go on runs. That's
because
ridiculous.
You should be praying.
This is not even an issue.
I'm not sure what this one particularly implies, except for the fact that he's saying, because I was consumed with my religion, which seems untrue, to be honest with you, based upon the Sundays from last week, that I wasn't able to get in physical exercise. But,
right.
So let me back up and give him the benefit of the doubt here. Is there anything about the way that the church handles their affairs or that we point people to that would give the impression that this isn't something that should be prioritized, your health?
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that your health shouldn't be prioritized, but maybe the costs that come with it. So the costs of doing the gym membership and the dietitian and having the physical trainer and all the different stuff. I could see, just based off of what I know about the organized church sometimes, that we could say, well, that kind of money could be going to the church. You don't need to spend that much money. That's not something you need to do. I would disagree with that, though. I think you can take care of yourself and still believe in Jesus. So I mean, I can see that there may be some things that are counterproductive to health if we're talking about like money being spent on being healthy.
So we may have translated a sell the nard, give it to the poor to keep the lard and give it to the poor type of thing.
Keep the lard.
I just came up with that.
That's great.
You just did that
right now.
Twisted right off the top of your head. Well done, sir.
The Lord has gifted me.
That is awesome.
I think he's just stretching.
Yeah.
I think he really had nothing to say, and he thought, well, health, yeah, I need another one.
Next week it's going to be, because I left the church, I can now go to buffets.
Actually, so...
I think you might have something, though.
Okay.
All right, here's where I'm going with this. All right, we have a tendency to de-emphasize the physical when it comes to... We'd rather make sure that our theological and our spiritual life is in order. And so we'd rather talk about the things of Jesus instead of actually going out and physically doing them.
Right.
And that seems to be a trend among what I would consider unhealthy churches, or at least an unhealthy trend among churches.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that extent, yeah, he's kind of hitting on something. But I think he's kind of stretching it a little bit far when it comes to that. Yeah, we'll de-emphasize the physical in light of the spiritual, but I think he's swinging it.
I think there is – it's probably not explicitly stated, right?
Mm-hmm.
But someone can, I think, maybe implicitly take the fact that we say, are you – the things that we prioritize, are you praying or reading your Bible? Those things happen where you're sitting for most most folks, right? And so it says, well, if you have to choose one or the other, do this. Sit solitary, like sit sedentary somewhere and study. Sit sedentary somewhere and pray.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, like I think they're pulling from what God is otherwise calling us to do, not something that He otherwise would have stated. But maybe that emphasis to say if your focus should be on this, what we've valued is an intellectualism, forgetting that we are physical people having a physical experience. Mm-hmm. That we also have a soul. That's true, but we are both of those experiences, and sometimes we default to saying, I'm concerned about the state of your soul, as if Jesus had nothing to say about our physical existence,
yeah.
Which would, again, then make his presence on earth kind of a moot point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he went to a lot of church potluck dinners, and he just thought, you know, fried chicken every day, and brownies, and pecan pie, I'm just trying to get, or came to our cafe and had donuts. I mean, we don't have a lot of healthy, we have some fruit, but.
Now, I know that I'm not exactly the poster boy for living in the kingdom and being healthy, but I can't imagine attributing any of what I've learned through the Bible and through my time, you know, being in church and learning more about God's character and his heart on stuff and my weight. Like I'm sorry, I'm having trouble even seeing the basis of this.
You're a good example. I would say over the past year, you have grown a lot spiritually and have become a lot healthier.
Maybe. Fair enough. I mean, I appreciate the stretch.
You can
there.
Do both.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm not a big guy because I spend time in the Bible.
No, and he said that. I mean, to be fair, his preface was that they don't have to be mutually exclusive. But then he did follow it up with something that seems like a basically non-starter.
I don't believe in so I was able to go on a mud run. I feel like this is – I think I'm struggling to see even the basis of this.
Yeah. So one of the things he said, sorry, but me personally, a shift in beliefs brought a shift in priorities such that my physical health is important to me. Yeah. Is there anything that we, from a foundational perspective, that we were like, my physical health is not important?
No.
Like, do you think it has a connotation where someone says, like, because you're supposed to be focusing on other people, or because there's kingdom work to be done, there's a lot of spiritual stuff to be going on, that like, I'm focusing on yourself in this manner is a selfish thing that you shouldn't be doing?
No. No, I don't see that at all. I that from that perspective, if we're honestly looking into the Word of God, and what we're supposed to be doing is we're supposed to be here doing kingdom work as long as possible, right? Like, we know that God is going to work through us. And I mean, Paul talks about, I don't know the specific quotes, but he talks about, like, what is it to live as Christ and to die, or to die as Christ, to live as gain, or I may be flipping
that around.
I'm sorry. So he's talking about there's physical work to be done here. Yes, it'd be much better to, like, live with Christ and everything like that, but there's physical work to be done. If we look at that perspective, we know that we need to take care of ourselves. I know that I need to get healthy because I want to be 80 still talking to my great-great-grandchildren about Christ. Like, I want to live here as long as God's got me here. That doesn't flip around my priorities of I need to be speaking about the gospel and kingdom living, and that means that kingdom living has a McDonald's right there. Like, that's that just don't see that. So
yeah, and I think actually that points to a lot of maybe where our issue here is that people misunderstand the work of the kingdom, right? It feels sometimes I think it feels like the work of the kingdom requires a robe, a candle, a book, and some bread, right? And that's the work that God has us for. Martin Luther may have done that. He also weeded a garden. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a life to live where that you we know so that we go, as opposed to our job is to know. And so when you heighten the intellectualism that surrounds what we're to understand biblically, and you make that the pedestal that you sit on, you're going to get fat sitting on it because all you do is sit on a pedestal.
Right.
So it's a risk. I'm trying to help this guy out as much as I can to explain why how we might got here. I think that's a stretch, but I suppose it's possible to have gotten to that point.
If taking care of yourself isn't biblical, Jesus wouldn't have told us that God's going to take care of our physical needs. I mean, he talks about the fact that we're going to be fed no matter what. Like, that's he knows we have physical needs. He knows we have that situation. If we're not supposed to keep that as a priority, that just doesn't make sense to go those two and two together. I think he's just kind of pulling hairs in a way that it doesn't need to be done.
Yeah.
Well, what happened is he gave up his faith, gave up on God. And with all that extra time, he had to do something. So he filled it with physical activity. Mm-hmm. And so then he thought, well, hey,
I'm getting healthier now.
Now I'm healthier, so this is a benefit. So I can see what he's saying there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you can't be healthy in Christ. So.
Yeah.
Anti-Jesus, pro-mud run.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the next one because that one's kind of lame. So I'm going to give him number 8, see if he can redeem himself. Here we go.
All right.
What I gained when I lost my religion. Number 8, better sex. You wouldn't believe how much more you can enjoy sex once you let go of the subtle or often not so subtle body shame that accompanies religious devotion. Boy, he's got me pegged on this one. I am ashamed of myself. I know a number of couples who once were devout Christians and now are both non-believers, and almost without exception, they have reported an improvement in their sex lives. It's not that religion always directly shames people for their desires and their pleasures, but the Christian faith in particular teaches you never to be totally at home in your own body. It talks as if you belong somewhere else, and this just isn't compatible with fully embracing your own physical existence the way that really good sex requires.
What?
Thoughts, boys?
Disagree?
So we're all in agreement here as Christ believers that God invented sex, right? Like, yeah, obviously that happened, right? And God invented sex for a reason. It's for a man and a woman in marriage. And he made it pleasurable. He knows exactly what happens. He knows exactly how we feel when that happens. God designed that the way that it is for a reason. It's meant to be pleasurable. It's meant to be a bonding thing that makes you fall more and more in love with each other. It's not a physical act that the world likes to put it as, but it's a lot more than that. And I think that this guy didn't understand what sex was supposed to be in a biblical relationship and the way that God intended it, if it's better outside of his relationship.
What is this? Christian faith in particular teaches you never to be totally at home in your own body. I'm just not into it tonight, babe. Resurrected body?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what is that supposed to mean?
I'm super excited about heaven. I can't really be here in the now.
Yeah.
Like, that's absolutely...
The deal is, like, that description It's weird to apply it to sex because, frankly, it should be it would be true in everything.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, I'm not enjoying this buffet tonight, or I'm not enjoying the company together because
I've got a better stomach in heaven.
Yeah. I mean, stuff is coming down the road, and I just can't fully commit to this thing because this isn't the end of all of it.
Oh, man.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding what he's meaning here, but I don't understand that.
Is this based on a perversion of modesty?
Well,
I'd say so. Yeah.
Hold on. So he's there was a hyperlink here. Hold on. Sex and Christianity make strange bedfellows.
What?
And if you understand Christianity at its fullest, it's, you should have the best sex because it's pure and
exactly
and it's awesome and it's holy. And
it's something that God created and it's
yeah. It's not like God created Adam and Eve and then came around the corner and said, whoa,
Adam, no.
That
way. What are you two
or
doing?
Does. I mean,
that's what he was doing when he was calling around asking for Adam. They were hiding. They were having sex.
I have not had that implied, but that's interesting.
He described it as a scenario of some kind of shame going on in the bedroom that people are ashamed of their
it's
bodies.
It's not that religion always directly shames people for their desires and pleasures, yeah.
And that's what's confusing to me because it seems like shame is like the enemy of Christianity. Like Jesus came to absolve us of that.
Yeah.
He gave us the ability to live at peace with the way that God has made us and these things. So I don't know. It's like there's something about Christ that seems to be missing from that picture if shame is in the middle of it. So.
Yeah.
I feel like we should write this dude a letter or send him an email or something and say, hey, man, you need to change the list to just 4. And then after that, you should probably give up.
I know a number of couples who once were devout Christians and now are both non-believers. And almost without exception, they've reported an improvement in their sex life.
I wonder if they weren't
They were devout religious
married.
People.
Is he talking about married couples or couples that aren't married?
I don't know. I always thought he implies religious devout, but I, you know where it's coming from. Who knows?
Like I can see that if it's not married couples that are being shamed because they're having premarital sex before they have that covenant with God, and now that they don't have to worry about that, their sex life's much better. But I don't get that from a married relationship's standpoint.
Yeah, I mean the basis here is that it's they have reported improvement in their sex lives. As if religion shames people for their desires and their pleasures, I suppose that like what we're talking the feeling guilty about things that actually weren't good, mm-hmm. that weren't for your joy and weren't for ultimately for the beneficial of both people. And now that you can take that away and say, well, you know, I don't like to be shamed upon things that I. Here's the deal: is if you pull a sense of shame from anything anybody does, it's always going to seem better. If I can steal from somewhere and there was a consequence of that, and you pull the consequence away where I don't feel bad about stealing, it's going to seem like an improved scenario because I got rid of the thing that morally said, "Hey man, you're destroying yourself." Well, you didn't stop destroying yourself; you just took away the beacon that says, "Hey man, you're destroying yourself."
Yeah. You know,
you know, the only thing I can kind of somewhat relate to what he's saying is my wife and I, we both waited till marriage to participate in those activities. And the first time, you're like, my whole life it's been no, no, no. Now it's yes, yes, yes. Now, I got over that in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, right.
But it was the first.
It takes longer for
maybe
the
it was
ladies.
5 minutes. And what's that?
It takes longer for the ladies to get past that.
It does. But
there's a lot more pressure on them.
30 years later, she's quite fine. You know,
things have worked out.
It's worked out. And maybe that's what the – some of these people have a misunderstanding of the beauty of intimacy and marriage and always felt the shame because they never got over the, no, it's okay now.
No, and that's actually probably true. It's true to say that the church has contributed to an unhealthy view of what sex is because what we did is we took the Catholic issue, which is where you find the thing that God doesn't want you to do. We found 2 steps back and then condemned that so that you didn't come anywhere near close to it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sex is bad. No, it's not. Like, don't say something's bad when it's not bad. It just – this is what it's designed for. This is how this is how you will enjoy it, and this is what God has created it for. And as opposed to talking about what it will be, we condemn it as if it's bad when you're X age and in X circumstances, and it's good when it's this, but not in the right context. We didn't provide the context of what makes it – what the good bad is.
Maybe it's Christian parents who kept saying, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, not giving them the full truth. It's great.
Yeah, it's awesome, yeah.
Wait till you get married.
Yeah,
it'll be really great. No regrets, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, there's probably some truth to that. Explanation seems pretty lame. And we probably have it's one of those deals where like every hotshot pastor that's out there is talking about sex, and we're like, oh, you know, that guy's leading. The truth is, it's like people are drawn to that. It's a curiosity that people want to know, and I think the church has failed to a certain extent to address it in appropriate ways. Like we just act like people will sort themselves out with it, and they do poorly because we're not speaking to it. You know, yeah. When the church bails on things like sex and money, people make their own decisions, and they make poor decisions because those are two things that are easy to worship. And then they answer quick needs, and it's pretty easy to get caught up in that. And what we've done is we've taken the easy road that says both suck, stay away from it. And we've not allowed, you know, God to work through those circumstances to understand his plan on how what we have can benefit others, and what he has given us in sex is a beautiful thing. And, you know, we probably bailed on that conversation more often than we haven't. And that probably has been a detriment. So I suppose it just represents a misunderstanding of what it is. All right. I slightly, I guess, redeemed on the better sex. Not the better health, though. I'll give you a preview on number 9 for next week. Friends who are more fun. What I gained, what I lost my religion. Jesus has boring friends. Sweet.
Not the Jesus I
Good
read
to
about.
Know.
Not the right guys. I mean, he didn't pray that way, but yeah, all right. So anyway, we'll check that out next week. Friends who are more fun. I don't know. He's really taking a downhill slide on me on this one.
Yeah.
That's kind of a boring.
It's like the 50 truths or the 50 reasons that God doesn't exist guy. Like, after a while, it kind of just went straight downhill.
It seems like the same one
prayer.
You said 20 years ago.
It's like, hey, man, it's the exact same thing you said in different words. Good stuff.
He just rephrased the argument.
He doesn't heal a leopard and a lynx.
And now, for America's fastest-growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
And you found yourself in the midst of, unbeknownst to yourself, and like a sly lynx creeping upon the back door, it's America's fastest-growing internet game show with an asterisk, Secular versus Solomon. Here's the nature of the game, in case you're unfamiliar. I will give you a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether it is a secular bit of wisdom of the world, or whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom. Frankly, we need to know where our wisdom is coming from. You got a sweet bumper sticker on a desk calendar. The question is that knowledge that you're bringing into your life and living by really something that Jesus would have advocated for? And so that's what we're going to walk through today. So I will give you that. You need to give me an answer of secular versus Solomon. If the answer is secular, I want a country of origin. Where does this wisdom come from? Because, you know, if you can't trust a Polack, I don't know who you can trust. So I need to know where those things are happening at. And that is your job. If you're on the chat at home, I don't even think we have a chat anymore. I got to fix that. Chat broke. You're going to have to keep notes on a desk at your place and take a picture of it. Let me know how you did. But that's secular versus Solomon. You guys ready?
Yep. Ready.
All right.
All right, here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Even a fish wouldn't get into trouble if it kept its mouth shut. Even a fish wouldn't get into trouble if it kept its mouth shut. Secular or Solomon? John Buva.
I'm going to go Solomon.
Solomon. Dave Herrick.
Secular. I'm going to go England.
England. Dan Hudson.
That is secular Antarctica. They have a lot of fishing up there.
I'm not sure an incorporated country.
Wouldn't that be down there?
Yep. It's a continent, Nan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
what's choose up there? Better.
Bummer.
Say Iceland or Greenland.
Iceland.
Man.
Okay, that was my next thing.
Solid. Fish wouldn't get into trouble if it kept its mouth shut. Secular Solomon, it is secular Korea.
Korea.
Secular Korea.
It's close.
Minus 20.
Oh, yeah, Mike's not here. Fast move.
Yeah, we're starting out rough, guys.
Right, so.
We're starting out rough on me. Minus 20.
Even a fish wouldn't get into trouble, you think, Solomon?
Hey, man.
They use nets.
I said... Starting
they
off,
don't care what they're
a little rough, gentlemen.
No, that's true. That's true. You beat upon yourself. Here we go. Secular Solomon. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
Oh, come on. That's Solomon. It's got wise. It's got righteous.
Herrick's betting the farm on Solomon. Dan Hudson?
I'm going to go secular. That is an ancient Aztecian proverb.
Aztec is a country, Dan Hudson says. John Buva.
I'm going to go Solomon.
The fruit of the righteous is the tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 11:30. Capturing souls like a creepy Halloween movie. Is King Solomon.
I go like there. A dream catcher. There's wise, there's righteous. You know it's Solomon.
Soul capturing, put a link in it. Dan says, it's an Aztec.
They do sick catch spirits and stuff, you know.
Candyman. Here we go. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threat. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threat, secular or Solomon. Dan Hudson.
Okay, I'll go Solomon on that.
Solomon on that. John Buva.
I'm going to go Solomon.
Solomon, Dave Herrick.
Solomon again.
The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but the poor man hears no threat. Not often the time, though, the way we think about that. The poor man is a freer man. He has very little to be held against him. And that is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 13:8. Proverbs 13:8 for the abacus at home. Ah, here we go.
Really, man?
Sorry, I usually don't keep a liquid in the studio because I do things like this, but the coffee is delicious. Here we go. Secular Solomon. It is better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. It is better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. Secular or Derek.
Solomon again.
Double Solomon. Dan Hudson.
Yeah, I'm going Solomon too.
Non-Aztec Solomon. John Buva.
Solomon.
He makes mistakes and likes, but not this one. Proverbs 16:19. It is better to be of lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. Congratulations, Buva. Things really turn around for you.
I told you, I start off rough.
Don't put the cart before the horse unless it's an electric cart and a very, very optimistic horse.
Hey, man, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the slugger to the one who sends him. That's you.
Shoot, when a finger points at the moon, the imbecile looks at the finger. When a finger points at the moon, the imbecile looks at the finger, secular or Solomon, Dan.
Boy, that's going to be secular. What non-country can I say?
Epcot Center.
we're gonna go Russia with that.
Floyd Steakhouse. John Buva.
I'm going to go secular. I'm going to go Greece.
When a finger points at the moon, the imbecile looks at the finger. Dave Herrick.
Secular, I'm going to say Italy.
The answer is China. China.
I was closer.
Never stare at a Chinese finger even during an eclipse. Secular or Solomon.
Man, that flipped.
He cannot be a gentleman that loveth not a dog. He cannot be a gentleman that loveth not a dog. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
I'm going to go secular. I'm going to go Scotland.
Makes a ton of sense. Dave Herrick.
Secular. Germany.
Very racist. Dan.
That's definitely British. Secular.
He cannot be a gentleman that loveth not a dog. Herrick's bigotry knows no bounds. German. German proverb.
Nice. We all guessed European.
You guys narrowed that down. Dog lovers in Western Europe. Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is the man of understanding. Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Secular or Solomon. Dan.
Fonzie says it would be a Solomon.
Solomon.
He's cool.
I'm going to go Solomon. Proverbs 15.
Cool Solomon. Proverbs 15. Dave Herrick.
Solomon as well.
Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a sweet, cool spirit is a man of understanding with some ad living by me. Proverbs 17. 17. A nice effort, Buva. 10-point deduction for your boldness and your arrogance.
I'm told to be bold, man.
I won't share my spoils with the proud. Negative 20, even. Secular or Solomon. If one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. If one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
Solomon, Proverbs 9.
Proverbs 9. Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Do you care to make a Proverbs guess?
Proverbs 16.
16. Dan Hudson.
This is probably where the change in the ESV will bite me, but I'm going to say it is secular Saudi Arabia.
Interesting choice. If one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. It is indeed Solomon. Proverbs 20. Proverbs 20.
Normally, mom and dad stuff is the beginning. Within the first. Hey, man.
My son.
Like the first couple chapters are father to his son and then six to name. So I hear parents. I go straight to the beginning.
I say beginning of Proverbs and, hey, look, a Chinese finger.
Forget that eclipse. Look at that finger.
Look at that.
I am an
imbecile. Secular Solomon, hey, how are you doing at home? Everybody doing well? You got good points? I'm not assigning you points. Do it appropriately. Be trustworthy and honest in all your ways.
You're all at minus 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Secular Solomon, tell your friend a lie. If he keeps it secret, then tell him the truth. Tell your friend a lie. If he keeps it secret, then tell him the truth. Secular Solomon, Dave Herrick.
Wow, that's pretty good advice. other than being immoral in a lot of different counts. But I'm going to say, let's say secular France.
Never trust a Frenchman. Dan Hudson.
Secular Brazil.
The same.
Secular Sudan. Yep.
What's the matter with you?
Lots of things. What's the matter with you?
Tell your friend a lie. If he keeps it a secret, tell him the truth, especially if he's Sudanese.
Sudan.
Secular Portugal.
I was close.
Portugal.
I was in the same area.
Well, okay, so what would be a good, if you were to take this test, what's a good introductory thing to tell you, to a lie to tell your friend that would otherwise not burn the bridge of friendship so that you could keep him as a friend?
I have three nipples.
And then what? What's the follow?
That's it. That's the whole thing.
And then, so what do you decide? You want him to keep that a secret? You say, hey, don't tell
hey,
anybody.
Hey, man, don't tell anybody. I have three nipples.
And then you just let it go?
3 months later, you ask all your friends, hey, man, how many nipples do I have? And if they all say two and mean it, you buddy.
Two, but I don't mean it. Chuck says three.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody says, two, I think. You know they know you got three nipples.
Yeah. I heard from the Portuguese exchange student that you have more than your
allotted. Raul told me about your nipples.
Why is there Raul in Portugal?
I don't know.
Is that a Portuguese name?
I think so.
What's a common name in Portugal? Eric, you're a world man. What do you know of a...
You're a world man.
You're a man of the world.
I met Emmanuel.
From Portugal?
That's close to Raul.
When I was there, yeah.
No, that's true. All right, I rescind partially. Negative 20.
That's fair. I expect that.
All right, secular or Solomon, God gives the milk. But not the pail. God gives the milk, but not the pail. Secular Solomon, Dan Hudson.
That's a secular, and we're going to call it Texas before it was America.
The Republic of Texas.
John Buva.
I'm going to go secular, and I'm going to go with the Ukraine.
Makes a lot of sense. John, Dave Herrick.
Secular, I'm going to say Netherlands.
God gives the milk, but not the pail. Is that true?
What?
Is it a true proverb?
Is it a true proverb?
I'm not telling you where it came from yet, but is it true? Does God give the milk, but not the pail?
Milk, but not the pail. No.
Why not?
Because God kind of provides you with the skills that you have, too. And the recept. I mean, God provides you everything, man. It's not like you're doing work based off of your work. It's you're doing work based off of God using you as a tool, man. You don't do anything. It's the Holy Spirit. He doesn't just give you the receptacle to pour the milk into. Or he does that, yeah. I'm going to say no.
Let's tie this all up. No.
No. That is wrong. And you Ukrainians.
No. Okay, well, so what's the misunderstanding here? God gives the milk, but not the pail, if it's not true.
You got to have some effort involved? Oh, is that the point?
I feel like you didn't make the pail.
You didn't make the milk
some work. You got to go find a pail.
What I'm saying is, like, if it has to do with... So it's about finding the pail.
Maybe.
It says God doesn't give the pail. So he's saying you search for the pail and then God delivers the milk and then we believe that?
I don't like dairy.
I'm lactose
God
intolerant.
God only provides half the task. Is that what he's saying?
This doesn't work. Syrup I'm in.
We're lactose intolerant. Milk.
So is it implying that God gives the milk but not the pail? He's saying like... you use the milk to fill the pail. So what he's saying is what God is offering, you have to bring something to the table to put it in.
This sounds like something that my kids might, or my daughter, if she gets all really me going out and asking her to clean her room, she's going to come back with the room half cleaned and say, well, God gives the pail, Dad.
That's
you got to meet me
That's
halfway.
True. That is a quip. It's like, hey, man, meet me halfway. God gives the milk, not the pail.
It's like, no, you need to fill the job. Come on.
It's even implying the opposite, though, where I say, I bring the pail, God will give the milk. In either case, don't trust a Romanian. God gives the milk, but not the pail, if you're from Romania. Romania.
That's exactly what I said when I said Ukraine.
That's not what I heard when
I
you
pronounce
said that.
Romania, Ukraine.
Now, I heard gibberish.
Fastest-growing game show.
It's kind of what it is.
Secular. Hey, you've been playing America's fastest-growing internet game show, completely unproven, asterisk, bullet point, whatever it takes for you to not... It may or may not be true.
Completely not true.
I don't check up on other internet game shows. But anyway, if you want to cast previous versions of Secular versus Solomon, test out your knowledge of what is worldly wisdom or what is biblical wisdom, go to lifefromthepath.org and look for games, and you can play previous iterations of Secular versus Solomon. Also, see if you can. We got games out there about what's heard on a Christian radio show to raise money, and the various prophecies or viewpoints of the end of the world.
Biblical clouds.
Yep. Yep, you can check that out. End of the world as we know it. So go to lifeandpath.org and enjoy that. Also, make sure you read up on your Proverbs, only because it's good to know what actually is a good bit of wisdom. It's generally, if it's not the Bible, it's probably Ben Franklin or a crazy Romanian with a pail looking for Jesus. All right, let's see. What else we got going on here? Abuva, what do you got? So we got some in Dear Life and the Path?
I do got some Dear Life and the Path. If you never say that again, I'd be happy to.
Brother needs some milk.
Hey, man, God brings the milk. He doesn't bring the pail. Dear Life in the Path, we have a neighbor who decorates his yard for Halloween in the worst way imaginable. Every year, it becomes more macabre. He has bodies.
Macabre,
excuse me.
Macabre, yeah.
Sorry, my bad. He has bodies hanging from tree limbs, gravestones with RIP on dirt mounds, and other unbelievable atrocities. He thinks it's funny. It is despicable, and it scares the children who must walk past his yard. When we ask him not to put such deplorable items in our neighborhood, he doesn't take it seriously. I'm thinking about taking up a collection and bribing him not to put his growing vulgar display up this year. What can we do? Spooked in Topeka.
I can't think of a worse idea.
Wow. You're going to pay him because
he's
been doing all of this stuff.
If someone pays me to put stuff down, like, I'm going to go buy more stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the stupidest way to solve that problem.
I feel like this is some 65-year-old English teacher that's just upset at all the bodies.
First of all, what was the example of the hanging from the tree, but then like
body limbs, yeah.
So graves with an RIP coming out of it?
Yeah, since when is that?
Well, on a dirt mound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry, you can drive past that sometimes, not in Halloween.
Yeah, like, you know what creeps me out? A lazy cemetery man who didn't dig.
Exactly. You know what really like grinds my gears and just is totally vulgar? When I drive past a cemetery, I'm just upset. I'm like, hey, man, those are dead bodies, and I'm sick of seeing them.
You're scaring the crap out of the kids.
Put that stuff in a wall where it belongs.
I mean, here's the deal. Like, it just, you know, don't overreach here. Like, limbs from the trees. That could scare kids. I get that. But, like, you kind of brought in a couple things that are pretty normal.
Yeah.
Most children are not freaking out at the sight of a mound with a headstone on it.
Yeah. What's Rip mean, Mom?
Who's Rip and why does he like hoes?
Yeah, who's Rip?
Be honest. Is it the kids that are freaking out or is
it
you?
Oh, no. It's totally this person. Spooked in Topeka.
I think Spook has a perfect teaching opportunity to say, hey, kids, look at this. Some people really go overboard on holidays like Halloween. I don't care for it. They like it. Just stay away from that guy. He's a creep. But you know what? Don't collect money. Just leave him alone. It's a short little holiday. It's over and it's done. Let people have their fun.
I can't think of a circumstance in which, like, finding something offensive that your neighbor is doing, then you solve it by taking up a collection.
Jim, we'll give you $500 to stop. No.
Okay, but Christmas is coming.
Yeah. This sounds like rewarding behavior.
You're getting a creepy Santa.
Headless Santa's on the way.
Yeah.
Hey, I feel like you're setting up a whole system. We talked about last year. What are you going to give me this year to not put it up?
Yeah. I planted another tree just so I can hang more limbs from it. It's going to be $1,800. all right, now that we've mocked this person, legitimately, how do you solve this problem?
TP the house.
TP?
Vandalize.
I say you get like a creepy, like Frankenstein's monster mob and then just go over to their house and it seems like you're a part of the display at that point in time, which would be really
funny. Zombie crawl.
Yeah. Exactly.
Nice.
Show up with like pitchforks and flames and it looks totally like it's a part of his display.
Just join in?
Yeah.
What if he loves it? He wants you to come
back. Oh, he's totally
going to
love
year.
It. That's why I'm saying, I'm giving advice to the dude. Like, set it up to where they start mobbing your house, and it looks even cooler. I don't want to give this person
advice. If you can't beat
them, join them. I do not want to give Spooked in Topeka advice.
Yeah, all right. So here's the deal. I would talk to him, I guess. And then if it doesn't do anything, then I feel like Dan's advice is pretty solid.
Yeah, because it's really – I think it's kind of ridiculous to talk to your neighbor about, hey, I don't like what you're doing. It's like, well, then move.
Yeah, where does it stop? I mean,
that's what I would say. You don't
– Jonathan, you put up way too many Christmas lights. And
a solid community thought. You don't like what I do personally? Shut your mouth and get out.
Buy my land.
Go find a homeowners association.
I recently realized that you painted your fence a defensive color. I'm sick of it.
And I would personally be the guy who wouldn't like that. I mean, I think it's kind of creepy when people do go that crazy for Halloween. But I wouldn't say, you know, I'd be just like, oh, that's, man, it sure is excessive, you know, and I'd kind of get over it.
Dan, I plan on wearing a banana costume. Is that going crazy for Halloween?
That sounds great.
Awesome. So, hold on a second. Let me back this up for just a second. So let's say you live in a cul-de-sac. It's ten houses around you. You put up something. Literally, like the other nine neighbors are, it's freaking out the kids. And some guy comes to your door and says, you know, hey, it's kind of freaking out the kids. Like, I don't know, it seems like a pretty hard character that refuses to dial it back. Because, like, to whose benefit is he doing that? Maybe he doesn't even know he's being that offensive. It seems normal to him. I don't know why you wouldn't have that conversation.
I'd want to know that I'm really freaking out the kids or if I'm freaking out mom.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the contingency here is that, you know, this guy's probably overreacting. He probably doesn't like it. He finds it gross. Anybody that uses the phrase macabre, like, you know, he's got a problem with it. That's why I agree. I think he's kind of an older guy who just is offended by it. I doubt the kids are actually scared. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the question is it true or not? But, I don't know, the community aspect to me feels like digging in your heels and refusing to even bring it up. Like, you don't like it, move. That seems dumb. I don't care about anybody else around me. I'm going to do what I want. It's kind of lame.
And it could be that our friend Spooked has had a death in their life recently. I mean, I was more sensitive to that type of stuff when I had fresh family members pass away. And it's just like,
All right.
You know, I don't need to see skeletons and cemeteries. And it's real. You know, I know you're having fun, but it's not fun when people die.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing than being spooked.
No, yeah, of actually being scared.
Yeah, I feel like if that were the actual situation, that definitely would have been mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's probably true. All right. Okay, what's the secular advice?
All right. Dear Spooked, what you're describing is a feature of Halloween that many children enjoy. However, you can't protect your children forever. When they're old enough to understand, explain to them that this is all done in the spirit of fun, and it's not real or dangerous.
That's
what they got.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we could. Okay, I kind of agree with that. Turning into a teaching opportunity. I agree with Ben having the conversation. If it's legitimately something that you feel is either spooking you and you have the entitlement to say it, yes, or it's legitimately spooking children, once again, you have the entitlement to say it, yeah. You can go say, hey, you know, Jimmy, your yard's freaking out all my kids. But if they blatantly refuse to do it or change anything, I mean, I don't think that it's necessary to just start taking up a collection as a homeowners association and get that person out. I think you could just go, all right, well, they said no. Don't be freaked out. It's not real.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Yeah.
All right. Want to do another one?
Yeah. Fire it up.
All right. Dear Life from the Path, when my husband and I were 18, we decided to have each other's initials tattooed on our ring fingers. His tattoo included the initial that one day became my last name. It's been 10 years, and our marriage is still solid and beautiful. I've worked hard in a nursing career, but I feel self-conscious about my tattoo, although I now wear rings as well. I still like my tattoo, but I don't want people judging me because of it. My husband says I'll only hurt myself if I remove something I love having. Do I express my love the way I wish or succumb to nasty stares from patients? Inked for love.
It's a tattoo on the ring finger?
Yeah, it's a tattoo on the ring finger rather than having a ring. When it started, so.
It's not that big of a tattoo, right?
Yeah, it's probably half an inch and then around the finger.
So wait, sorry. Well, I may have been understanding. What's the concern?
So
apparently, do I express my love the way I wish or succumb to nasty stares from patients? So apparently she's getting negative reactions for her tattoo.
Or she's anticipating negative reactions to tattoo. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd look at a tattoo and go, ooh, you can't provide medical care to me.
You must be married.
Yeah, well,
is that someone's initials on that ring finger? Sinner.
Yeah, like, I don't understand, like.
I don't either.
Seems fine.
Yeah,
go about your business.
Yeah, it seems fine to me. You're ridiculous. Okay.
So legitimate advice. Keep the tattoo. If you want to keep the tattoo, keep it. If it bothers to you, get rid of it.
Can she not wear a ring while nursing? Can she just put a ring over it?
That's what I was thinking too. Why not just throw a ring over it? Or constantly have a Band-Aid.
I mean, if you chose not to get a ring, actually, this seems safer, right? I don't want a nurse losing a ring in my intestines or something when they're in the surgeries. What?
All right.
That's how you get the staph infection.
Is someone having a ring on and it just gets stuck in your intestine?
Hey, you tell me that doesn't breed staph.
Haven't you ever heard of ringworm?
Is that what that's from?
Yes.
It's a worm off your ring?
Dan's on my side on this one.
Yeah, that's a great person to have your side on this one with ringworm.
Yeah, it's not a problem. What's the secular verse?
Okay. Deering for love. I agree with your husband. You are entitled to express your love any way you wish. Many professional people sport tattoos that are far more flamboyant than the one you have. If you catch a patient staring, smile and share the story behind it. I think it is sweet and rather charming.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
All right, we got time one more?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path, I am friends with two women who dislike each other. Neither one has family, so I usually invite them over for holiday dinners. Over the past 10 years, they have tolerated each other and have been cordial. But this summer, they had a big row, and the divide is even wider. I love them both, but how do I now handle Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, knowing how they feel about each other? Should I extend the usual invitation and hope for the best? Or should I not invite either of them to avoid the possible conflict? I will not take sides. I think both of them are being petty and childish, but I also don't know what to do. My family is quite large, and these two have always blended in nicely. In the middle.
Oh, I don't really understand the last comment relative to the rest.
There are all the families at the event?
Yeah. Apparently,
so
it's a big
just
family.
Large
number of
says,
people in the
large
room,
family.
So they don't have to interact with each other.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So it's pretty easy.
Set placemats.
Invite one to one and one to the other. Just have a conversation
that's what I was thinking
to say.
Too, is
hey,
invite one to
Thanksgiving
and one to Christmas.
Yeah.
But the whole family comes to both?
Apparently so.
So then one family's missing at one and one family's missing the other?
No, one
no,
person.
Family, just the one
no,
person.
No, yeah.
It's just one person that's not being invited. It's just like a friend. Jenny goes to one, Jill goes to the other.
No, no, no. Tell them to pull it together.
Doesn't seem like they're going to do it that
well. Obviously, they don't have that capacity.
I don't think that. It doesn't sound like she's tried.
Well, I think she's tried for 10 years.
Well, it sounds like she's just trying. She's assuming they're going to work it out. Like, she keeps inviting them. Like, I don't get the impression that she's actually, like, sat down and said, look, square this away. I can't have this. Otherwise, I have to start making weird decisions, like who's going to come to Thanksgiving and Christmas. I would say do that.
You think your Christmas or Thanksgiving is going to be a motivation for them to reconcile their relationship?
No.
That's going to be the tipping point?
Not implicitly on its own, but there is shame involved in that, right? Like there's an aspect of Chuck can't be with us this Thanksgiving because he can't get along.
So we should shame them into being friends.
Here's the deal. Shame. You got to be careful with that. There's not implicitly. Sometimes we treat shame as completely off the table, and I'm not sure we should. I'm not sure shame is always a bad thing.
Okay, but this is the right application for shame.
You guys are putting me in a position where if you can't get along, I can't have you both at the same event. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. We've got to work this out. Otherwise, I don't have a choice, and that's what I'm going to have to do. And that puts it to them to say, "This look at what this has come to. It's come to the point where our mutual friend has to stress over who gets invited to what thing and who gets separated from the family event because we can't work our stuff together. It could be a catalyst. It could not. But I don't see any reason not to try it.
All right. I see where you're coming from with that. All right. You want to hear what Secular has to say?
Yeah.
Dear in the middle, because you feel that having them together in the same room would cause tension for you, my advice is to have them over on alternate holidays.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's not the ultimate what may happen. I don't see any reason not to take.
We shouldn't start with that.
What is the most optimistic route?
Yeah, mediation? I think you're right. That does seem like it's a better goal. Otherwise, it's just, you know, what's the issue with our holidays? The bigger problem is the fact that you've got friends that are feuding. That relationship does need to be put in order. So I don't see a problem with leveraging the molehill in order to try and solve the mountain.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Have you ever been a part of something like that? Like trying to bridge together two people that just simply couldn't get along?
Yes. Every birthday party my children have ever had.
Do they share a birthday?
Wow. How does it work out?
They got to invite their friends who don't like each other. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, make your choice. I'm not going to play the game.
They have friends.
They have friends who don't like each other, but they like both of them.
Oh, I got you.
You know, and it's like, you can't control their relationship. I mean, you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got
on the second episode, it's my birthday, and it's like, it works for about an hour. Yeah.
I have a tight-knit group of friends, and like that involves some relationships, and we're friends with both parts of the relationship. And when the relationship crumbles, we all have to do that awkward will. Are we friends with them or friends with them now? Mm-hmm. And I hate choosing, so I'm kind of just like, hey, I love you. I love you. You guys didn't work out, but that doesn't mean we can't be friends, and it's always awkward. So I've had to deal with that.
Okay.
It's not fun, but whatever. I'd rather have the friendship of both.
No, I understand.
Do you want me to keep going so you can keep just agreeing with what I'm saying?
No, I think what you're saying is good, and it makes me happy.
All right, good stuff. You make me happy. Thanks for being here.
Hey, don't mock me. I can't take your stuff anymore.
That's understandable.
Hey, listen, Eric, you're listening to Life from the Path. We're broadcasting every Monday night here at 10 p.m. at lifefromthepath.org. Also, at Saturdays at 7 on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM. We're so glad to have you with us. Hey, here's the deal. If this is the first time you heard the show, just know that every once in a while we go hit up a buffet and that you're invited. And if that makes you like the show even more, I think that's great. If we didn't offer any redeeming value for you to listen, at least know that we eat buffets. So, anyway, if you're listening to all the podcast, give us, like, I don't know, 20 seconds. We'll be right back with you. You can hear some more of the show. If you're on 99.3, we've got to let you go. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Shoot. So here's the deal. I found some of the comments. And there's a couple good ones out there. So, poor guy, I feel bad because I didn't see these until now. So here's the three comments sitting out on the video. One, milk from nipple number 3, question mark.
What?
Is your that third nipple of yours that you lied to the Portuguese
man? Does it lactate?
Manifold?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
I would assume so.
Oh, absolutely.
I would just need to straighten
it's
that out.
The third nipple. It lactates.
You have to provide the pale, though.
Okay.
Yeah. God doesn't provide the pale for your third nipple lactating. Was that the full proverb that the Romanian man just didn't get a chance to write down?
No.
God provides the milk, not the pail, for your third nipple.
He didn't say there wasn't a dot dot dot. So I mean, either he got censored or he had completed his thought already. Let's see. There's a guest of Secular United States. Here we go. His question was: I have sex outside of wedlock. If I choose to wait until I get married, starting today per se, can it be just as fulfilling as if I were a virgin?
I'd say yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I would agree.
I mean, we're forgiven for sins. That's the whole concept, right? Like we live like a different life after we put down our old life.
Yeah, and I guess maybe to speak to that, it's not a timing issue. It's a situational, right? Right? Yeah. It's
the
like
spiritual.
Yeah, you're getting
your heart.
Thing. It's the problem with prior to getting married is like God designed you to enjoy sex in that relationship in that way with the connection with that person. And so if that isn't, if that isn't happening. It changes. Like when you get into the circumstance that otherwise God created that to thrive in, it's different.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Reasonably, I suppose if I'm asking a question from that perspective, I might say, well, if this is the person I eventually marry, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I think he's ultimately asking the question from the wrong perspective. He's saying, can I be in the same situation as someone who is not where I am? In other words, we've already had sex, and there's this other couple that they've not had sex. Can ours be just as fulfilling as theirs? You're comparing apples to oranges at that point. When you guys get married, the bigger question is just from here to there, what is the best course for you guys?
And that's true. Yeah.
And that's to follow and be obedient to what God's calling you to do. So that means to abstain from here to the day that you're
yeah.
married.
Right.
So you're comparing yourself to a life that you ultimately cannot have.
Yeah, so it's an irrelevant question at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to deal with the circumstances that either you're in or you've created or whatever, and that's mm-hmm. And I suppose if the broad question is like, how do I know that it's actually more fulfilling? I mean, from a theological perspective, either you trust God or you don't, mm-hmm. right? Like if he says it's going to be better, you have to assume that's going to be the
right.
case.
Yeah.
If he's not God, then it's irrelevant, and then there's no reason to kind of haggle about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fulfilling because it's obedient and fulfilling of God's relationship and what he wants is one of the things that he offers us. That's where it comes from. And if you're able to get to that point where you do abstain and you may have had sex with that person up to this point, but if you wait until that marriage and you decide that because this is something that God's commanded of me and because this is something that God wants for me and has something in store for me that I'm going to hold out going forward and I'm going to reinvent this relationship, I think that's perfectly like a grounds for having a fulfilling relationship sexually.
So yeah. people outside of Christ wouldn't understand the spiritual element of the sexual expression.
Right.
I mean, it is a deeply spiritual thing. If they don't understand spiritual things, it's purely a physical thing. So they're getting that half of it, and they think, hey, this is cool, this is great. But like, there's this other part that's so much bigger and just fantastic that is the spiritual side of it. I don't even know how to put it into words without being goofy. and put you in a creepy place. But
I'd stay out of that place.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you need to stay out of
there. It's just a fantastic spiritual experience beyond the physical. When you have that, the context of the scripture and obedience to God and being in God's will and knowing this is how he created it, and there's just this big picture of godness happening.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Okay. All right. I think that answers the question. Lactating third nipple, secular United States, and yeah, as
Republican Texas.
Whenever you decide to follow through with some obedience to God, it's something that he's designed. Yeah, I think that's going to be fulfilling. Definitely. All right.
Sweet.
What do you got? Some more? Get some more Deer Life in the Path over there.
I close them down, but I can pull them back up.
Sweet.
Yep.
Life in the Path never closes.
Never closes.
Hey, actually, hey, while you're doing that, so we were talking before the show started. Dave came across on gotquestions.org the top 20 most frequently asked Bible questions. Oh. So I don't want to talk through all these, but I think the interesting thing is what the questions are that are most frequently asked, not necessarily what the answers are. So like, check out the top 20 most frequently asked Bible questions. I don't think these are in any particular order. One, women pastors or preachers. What does the Bible say about women in ministry? What does the Bible say about homosexuality? What does the Bible say about tattoos? Once saved, always saved. Is eternal security biblical? Can a Christian lose salvation? Is it a sin according to the Bible? What does the Bible say about interracial marriage? Who was Cain's wife? What is the Christian view of suicide? Do animals go to heaven? What happens after death? What does the Bible say about Christian tithing? What is the gift of speaking in tongues? What does the Bible say about dinosaurs? What is the importance of Christian baptism? What does the Bible say about drinking alcohol? What does the Bible say about gambling? What does the Bible teach about the Trinity? What does the Bible say about sex before marriage? Where was Jesus for the 3 days between his death and resurrection? And what does the Bible say about divorce and remarriage? Huh. And so here's the deal. Like, it's not that on their own these questions aren't interesting, but like the general premise of them tends to be starting from here's things that I want to do or have done. What does the Bible say about that? You know, like hey, here's a moral looking for a moral guidepost, right? We're not looking when we approach the Bible, are we looking for Jesus or are we looking to understand what the moral, what the pulun, what the pylons are? Mm-hmm. And that seems predominantly what we're asking. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that when you're approaching the Bible, like that's the predominance of the question. And I think maybe for me, what if people are unfamiliar with the Bible and these are the questions they're coming for, we're not talking about the Bible right. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the Bible correctly. If like that's immediately, if we've introduced the concept of the man, of God, man, Jesus Christ, and their question isn't like, I don't understand, man, how is that? Like, that's a reasonable question. What does that mean? What is he asking? What does he want? But we want to know, what does the Bible say about tattoos? We're looking for it for a moral guidepost.
This is like you going to your wife saying, hey, the neighbor's kind of cute. What can I do with her to not make you upset?
Yeah.
How far can I go with her?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What would be all right with you?
Well,
as opposed to otherwise, like in that same scenario, pursuing trying to understand your wife more,
yeah,
so that you're not bothering talking about things like how far can I go with a neighbor? Yeah. So I mean, anyway, it's interesting on the types of things that we want the Bible to tell us compared to the things that the Bible is actually trying to communicate. Does it encompass these things? Mostly. Mostly it touches on them, but generally not for the reasons that you're asking. Mm-hmm. Like, God is trying to point to you so like you can understand the identity he's given you and know when you're outside of that. That's the reason I want to know that is because I want to know, I understand what God has created for me. But like, if we're just looking for a moral guidepost, I mean, there's a lot more lenient and frankly more benevolent moral guideposts as far as the whatever hedonistic thing you want to be a part of. I'd go somewhere else. Yeah. Because says he is, and Jesus isn't who he says he is. What are you checking the Bible for anyway? Mm-hmm. There's better places to get it. Plenty of guys on the internet tell you do what you want.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was interesting. The types of questions that people are asking of the Bible, and then what the Bible's actually trying to say. What you got, Bubba?
All right, Dear Life of the Path. A wonderful man named Frank said he was interested in developing a relationship. The problem? He is a super neat freak. A person could live in his garage. It's that clean. The floor is spotless and everything is in its place. Frank washes and shines his car every second day. When there is a delivery to his house, he makes the delivery people remove their shoes before entering. I'm neat, but not to that extreme. When I'm at Frank's house, I'm on pins and needles if I leave a glass on a table that might leave a ring, and terrified I'll drop something on his carpet. Frank has never said anything, but I wonder what he's thinking. I like Frank a lot, but when he comes to my apartment, I notice his 360-degree gaze around the rooms. Another possible problem? He has no interest in culture or the arts.
I didn't see that coming. Go ahead.
Turn there. Am I right in seeing more minuses than pluses in such a relationship?
The complete balance. I've weighed everything. He is found in want.
Neat enough in Pennsylvania.
Here's the deal. I kind of get the premise of that question, and it took a weird turn.
Let me describe two things about him. He's a neat freak. Long, long story. And he doesn't like the arts. Seems like that was an afterthought.
Is he evaluating this guy for a friendship or for a,
yeah, what's
like
the
a roommate?
It seems, okay, thing. So am I right in seeing more minuses than pluses in such a relationship? I'm guessing that this is for a relationship more than a friendship.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
Here's the deal. I feel like you've created a lot of this in your own mind. If you've been to Frank's house, wait. His 360-degree gaze in each of the rooms. When I enter a room, don't you tend to look around?
Yeah, I was going to say, I tend to look at places that I go to.
Well, you got
to
know where the exits are.
I'm just imagining this awkward person walking in, standing in a room, and turning an entire 360, yeah. And then walking into the next room, doing a whole 360. I'm not worried about his neat freakness. That's just plain weird. Yeah. This person's like, I have a ritual. Whenever I walk into a room, I need to do a circle like I'm doing the Hokey Pokey. Is that okay?
I spin everywhere, much like the dog does before he sits down. That's what I do.
I'm not checking your place for dirt. I'm just doing a real quick jig.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not cultured.
This description sounds like the way Seinfeld would describe someone.
Yeah.
Just looking for ways
hands.
To reject people.
Yeah, so here's the deal. If you don't want a relationship with this man, like, just tell him you don't find him attractive or whatever the truth is. Because his potential neat freakness, which he has not mentioned, you know, and like, here's the deal. I assume that if she had gone to his house and left like a cup on a table somewhere, and he had like come in within 30 seconds and kind of wiped it off, that would have been part of the description.
Yeah.
Like, if it had happened, it would have reinforced. But she didn't really say any of that, so I'm assuming it's not happening.
Yeah, she doesn't know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey,
well,
Frank,
ask him.
What you thinking? Are you a
I love
neat
her name.
Freak?
Neat enough.
Yeah, I mean, you got it. Here's the deal. If you're going to be in a relationship, you got to know who you're dealing with. I don't think to me, it's not off the table. Like, hey, man, like, how touchy are you on this neat stuff? Like, does that really bother you?
I feel like that's first date stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. Like, here's the deal. If you want to check it out and be kind of sly boots about it, order a hot dog or something. Just dribble a little something on your chin. See how he handles it.
Dribble a little something on your chin.
If he shakes around and, like, can't barely stand it, or he's like, hey, man, you got a little something on your chin. Just see how he handles it.
You know,
it.
That's true. I have been in a situation like that where I've gotten something on my face, and someone has licked their thumb and done the whole mom thing. And it was no longer a date after that point. It was a straight up, hey, mom, can I go hang out with my friends now kind of deal. It was awkward. I'm going to try that whole dribble on the chin thing going forward. If she, nope, not happening.
Yeah, if she comes after it with her thumb,
exactly.
You got to let her go. Yeah.
I'm like, you best not put that on my face.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to your place. Can I clean your toilet?
Yeah. Hey, I noticed you have dirt on the corners. Can I clean that?
Yeah, can I? Anyway, I'm going to spin around real quick, and then I'm going to get right on that stuff.
Exactly. Hey, let me do a 360 real quick like I'm a cleaning robot. Did you know my nickname's Roomba?
Yeah, they call me the Roomba.
All right.
So advice, straight up advice, like, you're not being honest.
Yeah, there's something you're missing, or you're just splitting hairs on something, and you're, I don't know.
Yeah, like, if you don't want to date him, or you're looking for excuses, like, figure out why you don't want to date him, and part company, you don't even have to tell him. Say, look, it's not working out, Frank.
Hey,
yeah,
man, Frank, if Frank smells awful, and that's the reason, but you want to come up with neat freak instead,
yeah,
I think you're just looking for a way to get out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You're too clean and you hate the arts. Get out. Spin elsewhere, bud.
Have you composed music recently, Frank? Can't be in this relationship.
Culture called and it's sick of you too. Get out. I hate culture. I love this guy.
The arts.
He's my favorite.
All right. Dear Neat Enough, if what you want from the relationship is just friendship, I don't see a problem. However, if you're looking for more than that, then I'm afraid my answer is yes.
What?
To which I'll add one more minus, your inability to discuss your misgivings with him.
Yes.
Wait, But so wait a minute. I don't understand, though. Like, why is that okay for friendship material?
Yeah, exactly.
I can be your friend even though you hate things that I hate and you seem to be a neat freak that I can barely tolerate. But we can be buds.
Hey, man, you judge my entire existence every time you come over to my house, but I think we can really watch a TV show together. By the way, I hate the fact you hate arts. All right.
Yeah, I don't understand. Hey, give me one more.
Okay, I got one more.
I need something to cleanse my palate after okay. that guy.
Ooh, this should be interesting.
Uh-oh.
Dear Live from the Path, recently I went to the funeral of a family member. As we were leaving the chapel, a relative asked me if I was aware that the funeral had been live-streamed. I was appalled. After all, going to a funeral allows us a chance to say goodbye to the deceased and to be there to support the surviving family and friends. I don't believe that live-streaming can accomplish either of those missions. Am I wrong to think that this was really inappropriate? Baffled in Boston. Live-stream and funerals.
Thoughts, boys?
Was it a private funeral?
What's the difference?
Yeah, I was going to say, does that mean like there's security and red ropes?
You're not in.
Hey, man, if I could be funeral security, I might get in that business.
You want to be a bouncer?
Actually, I would totally be a funeral bouncer. You're not on the list, sir.
Hey, you're not.
You guys are getting out of control. I got
to explain to me how you knew Charlie, and I'll let you in.
I don't think about this. People who are willing to cause trouble at a funeral, I feel like, are more to handle than you're thinking.
I don't know, man.
Like a guy that's willing.
Somebody's trying to get in a funeral that I'm working security at. I'll keep him out.
All right, maybe this was a less than productive tangent.
All right, so is it okay to live stream a funeral?
Of course.
Okay.
Let's say Uncle Buck is in California and he has just had surgery, just had both of his hips replaced, and Aunt Margaret is on the other coast, and he can't go to the funeral, but he sure would love to say goodbye. In a little way,
so he's
going to
Skype in.
So he'll just
like someone have the camera and like walk it up to.
Here's
the
deal.
Front?
I mean, what's look what he's participating in. He may not be able to be there. Let's use Uncle Buck as the example. Okay,
I like it.
He can't make it. He gets to see the things that people are saying about his brother, friend, whatever.
Yeah.
Right, and enjoy in the reminiscing the experience. To say that that first thing is not accomplished by live streaming, I think is false.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
I think it's false. It doesn't accomplish necessarily being there to support the family. But, like, if the truth is you literally can't be there to support the family in that way, like, let's call it for what it is. I don't know why we would say, hey, man, I know you just got out of surgery and you want to watch your brother's funeral, but, like, I'm offended by that. No grief for you. Like, I don't get it.
Right. Yeah, if I were in a situation where someone in my family passed away and I was not able to get to Aunt Margaret on the East Coast, right, I would appreciate the fact that I could be in some way present for the situation, watching it happen and hearing the memoirs and seeing the pictures and people there. It's a comforting thought that that's happening. You know, it's comforting that this person is being respected in their death and in their life and, celebrating their life, the life celebration thing we talk about sometimes. I think that that's perfectly acceptable for someone to be there.
I think they should enable chat as well.
Yeah, so I was just going to say
that's awesome. Someone's on a computer, and Uncle Buck would like to say something now.
ROFL. So like, I literally had it in my tongue. There's a way to do this wrong, and then Dan sailed right in from the cheap seats and had it ready to go. I mean, you can run commercials at the start, sell advertising, and do a chat.
Send a hologram of them dancing.
This
too.
Funeral brought to you by Toyota Camry.
Rearrangements.
Welcome. Yeah, there's a way to do it wrong, all right? There's a way. I'll be right back. Not really, I'm dead.
And we're going to go on a commercial break now.
Yeah, there's a way to do it wrong, but, like, it's not implicitly – it's different, right? I mean, you couldn't always do that. And I suppose there's a thought that, like, it's encroaching upon a private event. But, like, I mean, it doesn't have to be open to everybody. Share it with who you want to share with.
Right.
I don't think but there's nothing implicitly wrong. A lot of people film those to watch it later.
Right.
Now you're just haggling over how soon after the event you're allowed to watch it.
I think that the thing that could become an issue is how broadcast the funeral actually is. Like, is this like something that's on the front page of YouTube that everybody can hop on and just watch Aunt Margaret's funeral for some reason?
Yeah.
I can see where that could become an issue, but I don't think there's many people out there that would search, hey, I want to watch a live funeral. Like, I feel like there's a lot of other stuff to watch. You should find yourself a new TV show.
I feel like you've never been on Live Leak or 4chan. All right.
Oh, wow. I guess true. Yeah. All right. All right.
Live funeral. Yes.
So we're for it. It's okay.
I think it's a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it's – yeah,
I'm good.
The two things can be accomplished. All right. Let's hear what let's hear what Secular's got. Dear Baffled, you may be passing judgment too quickly. These days, many funerals and memorials, are live streamed, but are not available to the general public. To view them, one needs an access code. While I agree that the purpose of a funeral is to comfort the living, as well as pay respects to the deceased, what you haven't taken into account is that there may be individuals who may be unable to attend. It could be that the airfare is more than some relatives can afford, or that health problems make travel difficult, in Uncle Buck's case. In some cases, streaming the service or memorial is a practical solution so that everyone can be included.
That seems completely reasonable to me. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging out for the extra podcast. I hope you got your money's worth. We will see you next week, Monday at 10 o'clock at livefromthepath.org, Saturday at 7 on 99.3 KTIA, or here during the week at the website, or shoot us an email. Go info at livefromthepath.org. We'd love to answer any of your questions, take your harassment, or otherwise see pictures of your, your deceased. So yeah, let's go with cat. Yeah, yeah. And if you live stream your funeral, leave us out of that stuff.
Don't give us the access code.
Yeah, we don't need that. Unless you're selling advertising, just so I can give an idea of what you can do wrong.
It's a funeral brought to you by Live from the Path.
I will not sponsor a funeral. Pretty much only because we don't have any free cash. Let's spend it at the hibachi. All right, have a good week.